Then I would invite you to open your Bibles to Romans chapter 8, verses 35 through 37 for the text of our lesson this morning. Romans chapter 8, verses 35 through 37. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? As it is written, for your sake we are killed all day long. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter. Yet in all these things we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. I didn't get nearly as far on this lesson last week as I'd intended to. I don't promise to do a better job today, but I'll cover what I think I can cover and still get the points across that I want to cover. And I want to use illustrations of these that will slow me down, so just bear with me, please. I think about places in my life where I went through stress, and this is just to illustrate. Everybody goes through stress, and I do that just like everybody else. One time that comes to my mind, and I can still remember this pretty vividly, that means it was quite a bit of stress because it happened in January of 1992, and that was just a few years ago, and I was making my first trip to Africa, and my fearless leader was Brother Lowell Blasingame, whom I still just am in awe of to this very day, just love him dearly. And it was his seventh trip to Africa. I had never been across the water. And I was so excited my feet were not touching the ground, but I was also in great fear of what I was going to face, because Brother Blasingame had shown me, this is back before they had this PowerPoint stuff, and he had a slide projector, and he'd shown me slide pictures of his work in Africa and in Nigeria, and he said, Keith, I can show you everything but the smell. And he told the truth. The smell is something you just have to experience, particularly in Lagos, Nigeria, which is not one of my favorite places in the world. But at any rate, so I was excited and I was fearful, and I couldn't, on the airplane, I couldn't sleep a wink. I would just could hardly wait to get there. And we got to London, and they took Lowell off of the airplane in a wheelchair. You could have knocked me over with a feather. We're halfway to Africa, and our fearless leader is down. We're going on to Africa. What will I do? I cannot lead this expedition. I was just absolutely in a great deal of stress. Well, everything turned out fine. And Lowell continued. He only passed out one time on the trip, so he did fine, and we had a good trip, and it was a wonderful, wonderful memory, and I believe we did a good work. But you've been through times of stress like that. And in Romans chapter 8, there are two words that the apostle uses that both have to do with stress. Now, the words actually have to do with things that come upon us as persecution for our faith. And sometimes that is what we face. But we face a great deal of stress in life that may not even be directly related to our faith. But our faith is what causes us to be able to handle that properly if we have the faith that we should. But here in Romans 8 verse 35, he uses two words that I want to get before us for the second time. The first is the word tribulation. And you should have an outline in your hand. And you can see I have a copied a definition out of a Greek lexicon of those two words. And that word tribulation has to do with things that press down on us. We all have things that happen in our life that just press down on us as a weight. And then we just get to the point where we say, I don't know if I can go another step. This is weighing me down. Well, that's tribulation. That's what that word means. And then that word distress is a very similar word. It means things that just kind of bind us in. We I'm in such a tight place, I just can't go any further. That's distress. And both of those things are things that cause stress on us. And we have to, as Christians, know how to handle those things. And that really, this statement of Romans chapter 8, verses 35 to 37, is one of the greatest statements in the Bible concerning these things. Now, he's talking in this context about things that we go through because of our faith. And Satan is doing these things too. But let me tell you something. Even if it's not because of your faith, it is Satan that's doing those things to you. And it's Satan who's trying to get you to knuckle under, to give in, and either to do things that are sinful and wrong. It's like the words that we say or the things that we do to other people. Or he's trying to get you to just give up and quit trying to be a Christian, just turn back and live in the world. But regardless of whether it's things that come upon us because of our faith, are things that just happen to us, that happen to everybody else in life, these things are distress and they're tribulation. They're the things that cause us to be, as we say, all stressed out. And we have to know how to handle these things. Now, we've been talking about the proper attitudes to have. And I've gone over several of those attitudes, and I'm not going to repeat those things. But I want to come to this matter of being content with the things that we have. And before I go to the passage, Philippians chapter 2, verses 10 through 14. See, this is one of the attitudes we need to have in order to keep from succumbing to this matter of stress, is to learn to be content with what we have and content in the situations in which we find ourselves. As most of you know, last summer, Michelle and I went to Uganda, and Michelle is my daughter. We went together to Uganda and Kenya. And this was my third trip to Kenya, her first trip to East Africa, her first trip to Africa. It's an eye-opening experience. And I have the picture on the chart. I hope you can see that. I know it's a small picture. You might not be able to see it very well. But that's a preacher that I just worked with for a day or two in southwestern Kenya. He lives right on the border with Uganda, the very western edge of Kenya. And if you can see there, he has a wife and six children. And they live in that one-room house that he was born in. That one-room house is made of mud that's held together by sticks, and the mud's plastered on the sticks. And then they have afforded a tin roof, and that's something. They have a tin roof instead of a thatch roof. It has no door. It has a mud floor. And he makes a living for his wife and six children by farming 3 acres of land, which, by the way, is low, swampy land, and that means it's malarial. And when I was there with them, she had malaria. And I don't know if she got over it or not, but she's standing there smiling as I take their photograph with their six children. And her standing there with malaria. And as I was leaving, and I asked him, well, how much land do you farm? And he said, 3 acres. And by the way, they farm it with one hand tool. Okay? And he does it by himself unless she's feeling. And of course, she'll get out there and work those fields with him unless she's sick or taking care of the children. And the children will too, by the way. But nonetheless, I said, well, how do you make ends meet on 3 acres of land? You're feeding a family of, and his father, his aged father, lives with him in that one room with no door. And so there's 9 of them in the, I said, how do you feed a family of 9 people with what you can produce on 3 acres working with hand tools? And his reply was, hand to mouth. And that's right. That's what, it's just hand to mouth. And hoping that the crops produce this year. But I'm really not satisfied with my 3 bedrooms and 2 baths and all the night. I need something better than that. Isn't that the way we are? Well, now let's go to Philippians chapter 2, verses 10 through 14. And I want us to talk about what the Apostle Paul said concerning himself. I remind you of the context. Most of you know the context, because several years ago I preached through the book of Philippians here, and I hope that you remember that when Paul wrote the book of Philippians, he was in prison in Rome. He was facing the possibility that he would be put to death because of his preaching the gospel. He was in chains, chained to a Roman soldier, and he had brethren outside the prison who were saying bad things about him. We're running him down. Now, you put yourself Let me put myself in that situation. I'm in jail because of my faith. And by the way, in jail then, and it's that way pretty much in Africa now, they wouldn't get fed unless some loved one brought them food. If he didn't have somebody that loved him bringing him food, he'd just do without food while he was in prison or in jail. And he was chained to a Roman soldier. Brethren were saying bad things about him outside of the prison, and he didn't know whether he was going to die for his faith or not. That's horrible, isn't it? How could you possibly survive in that situation? Well, now let's read Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 14. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again. In other words, the church in Philippi had sent him some help in his distress. Though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. He's letting them off the hook. And by the way, they needed to be let off the hook because they were going through tribulation, persecution themselves, and they were doing the best they could. They'd send Epaphroditus to him to help him out. Not that, now notice here carefully, this, I'm just amazed. Every time I read this passage, I'm amazed all over again. Not that I speak in regard to need. Paul, I think I'd be needing. Not that I speak in regard to need. For I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. Let me ask you something. Could you be content in northern New York where it snows 100 inches every winter? 14 of the best years of my life were spent preaching in northern New York. And I hate cold weather. I've learned in whatever state, Paul says, I am to be content. That's even in the state of New York. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. I have stayed, please don't take this the wrong way. I don't have the heart of Paul. I'm working on it. I have stayed with some brethren in Huntsville, Alabama, who had a three-story house with an elevator in it. And the house was worth well over $1 million. And I was in the lap of luxury. And Sandy stayed with me. We just absolutely were. And they were brethren that loved us and we loved them. And I was just absolutely in the lap of luxury. And I enjoyed every minute of it. And I have slept on the dirt floor of a mud hut in southwest Zimbabwe, and been served tea that was brewed over a fire, a fire that you make with sticks outside, with goat's milk in it, and I enjoyed every minute of it. I have learned that there are places you can be content. Now, I don't have yet the heart of Paul, but we all need to learn that lesson. I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased. I can go through things that are tough. And I know how to abound. When things abound, I don't feel guilty about it. The Lord's blessed me and I'm thankful for it. We all need to be that way. Everywhere and in all things, I've learned both to be full and to be hungry. Both to abound and to suffer need. I can, now here's the key. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. There are people that I'm looking at right now who are going through things that I've never been through, who are suffering things I've never suffered. And my heart goes out and I pray for you every day. But you can do all things through Christ who gives us the strength to face the good times and the bad times. The good times are tempting, the bad times are tempting. The couple up in northern New York that helped to start that congregation up there, though they lived below the poverty level, were helping out a preacher in the Philippines. And the preacher in the Philippines wrote to Colleen and said, I believe the poverty is the devil's temptation for us. And Colleen wrote back and said, I believe that our prosperity is the devil's temptation for us. That's right. We need to learn how to face both situations. The poverty and the prosperity. They both are temptations. But we need to learn to handle both of those things and still be connected. Nevertheless, he says, you have done well that you shared in my distress. To learn to face with contentment whatever the situations of life that come our way is one of the difficult lessons that we learn. If we can learn that lesson, then we can learn how to handle stress. And it doesn't mean that it's not wrong to be sorrowful when things happen that hurt us and weigh us down. Grief is not a sin. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 4, Paul says, now he's talking about the first letter that he wrote to the Corinthians. And in that letter, if you read the book of 1 Corinthians, it is full of all kinds of harsh things that Paul said to the Corinthians. He was reaming them out. He was telling them all of the sins. They were rebukes that he had. And some of it was full of sarcasm that the Apostle Paul had for them. But did he say that because he hated them and he was just venting his spleen, as we say? In 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 4 is the follow-up letter, a part of it. And he says, for out of much affliction, see there's that word, affliction, things that press us in, much affliction and anguish of heart. He had grief. He had anguish in his heart. I wrote to you with many tears. When you have to say hard things to your children because they haven't done right, it hurts you, doesn't it? And those were Paul's children of the faith. He said hard things to them because they needed to hear those things. But his saying it hurt him worse than them hearing it. He said it out of anguish, affliction, and tears. He didn't want to say that to bring them to grief. Not that you should be grieved, but that you might know the love which I have so abundantly for you. It's all right. Paul had grief. He had anguish of heart because of his love for the Corinthians in their sin and the sins of our children and those that we've helped lead to Christ. They bring us great anguish and grief because of our love that we have for them. It's all right to have that grief, but what's wrong is to have despair. Where we get the idea, there's nothing I can do. Everything is bad. It can't get any worse. I just can't handle this anymore. That's despair. And the truth of the matter is, yes, you can. Now listen carefully. You're a Christian. I'm talking to Christians. You can handle it. I know I don't want to handle it, but you can. If you couldn't, the Lord would not have allowed it to happen. He will not allow Satan to tempt us beyond our ability. And I should have had that passage on here. That's in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. You can add that to your notes. There's no temptation taking us, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow him to tempt you beyond what you are able, but will with temptation show the way to escape that you may be able to bear it. God will not allow Satan to tempt us beyond our ability to bear. He allows Satan to tempt me all the time beyond what I want him to do. But he will not allow him to tempt me. And by the way, we're going to see as we get to the end of this lesson that when we go through that successfully and we bear it, it makes us better Christians. It makes us better people. So we must not despair. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, Paul is talking about the apostles in general, but himself specifically. He says, we're hard pressed. See, there's that tribulation. Hard pressed on every side. Just there's no way I can turn and get away from the persecution, Paul is saying, the affliction that's coming upon me. Yet not crushed. Oh, we're pressed hard, but we haven't had our faith crushed. We haven't had our spirits crushed. We are perplexed. I don't know how I'm going to handle this, but I know the Lord knows how to handle it. And so I'm not in despair. I don't give up and say there's nothing can be done. I just give up and turn back to the world, quit trying. No, Paul didn't do that. So it's all right to have grief, but it's not right to despair, to say there's nothing I can do. Yes, the Lord will bear you through this too, if you just keep your faith in Him and keep serving Him. All right. Then there's some right actions that we are to take. That picture I had before you, I'm going to tell you about it in just a minute. It's one of my favorite pictures. We need to be thankful for all. When we're going through times of distress, we need to, as the song says, count your many blessings. And the only thing wrong with that song is we have more blessings than we can count. But we could do our best to count them up and just keep thinking about it when there's things that are weighing us down. As the Apostle Paul commands in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 16 through 18, rejoice always, pray without ceasing, and everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. Be thankful for the things that God has blessed us with. You know, if I stopped and just tried to count all the ways that God has blessed me, it would just overwhelm me. I could not possibly get to all the many, many ways that God has blessed me. But I'm just thinking right now about this old gentleman. He was 80 years old when I was in Kenya last summer. He's a retired policeman. He's the father of the preacher in the place where I was teaching there, where Michelle was teaching the women. And he didn't have any nice clothes to wear to come to the studies. And Rossi's not here, so I can say this. Rossi's still in California. But Rossi had sent with me a whole bunch of the clothing that belonged to Carol Stansberry. And it was just the right size. And so now the old gentleman has a suit and a shirt and a tie and a pair of shoes that are not shown in this. And he was so happy with those things. And he came up to me just smiling. And he was just such a gentleman. He came up to me smiling and he said, "How can I thank you?" And it just his joy. And I just assured him, "Well, it's not from me, it's from Sister Rossi Stansberry. And that clothing belonged to her husband, and she's just delighted that you're able to have those things." And I could hardly wait to show that picture to Rossi. By the way, there's several other fellows over there that are now wearing Carol Stansberry's clothing. But just to be thankful for the blessings that God has so richly bestowed upon us, that's the first thing we need to do in order to handle the distress and the affliction that comes upon us from time to time. And then we need to learn to be gentle with other people. Now, the word in the Old King James Version is a better translation. The Old King James Version is the better translation of Philippians chapter 4, verse 5. It says, "Let your gentleness be known to all men, the Lord is at hand." The Old King James Version has the word moderation. That's the right word. Now, the problem with the word gentleness there, it's a broader word. It includes gentleness to other people. And this is from Vine's. I don't think I put this in your notes. You can write this down if you want to. From Vine's Dictionary of New Testament Words. The word literally means sweet reasonableness. I'm not too often accused of being sweet. But I do try to be reasonable with people. There are people you just cannot reason with. They only see their own side. Now, I'm going to tell you a story. One of the persons was a witness of this in this audience. But I one time called on a woman who had sinned against the church. And her husband was there and another man was with me. And she had all kinds of accusations against that other man, which as far as I could see were unfounded. And every accusation she would make, his reply was, "I'm so sorry, would you please forgive me?" I don't think she ever heard him. And she stood in front of me. I've never seen such a performance in my life, and I hope I never do again. She stood in front of me and literally jumped up and down. This is a middle-aged woman. Jumped up and down and screamed, and her eyes were bugging out. And I thought, I don't believe I'm seeing what I'm seeing. And all the while she was screaming accusations against a man, which as far as I could tell were unfounded. And he kept saying, "I'm sorry, will you please forgive me?" And she never heard him. Now, how reasonable is that? I've never in my life encountered anything more unreasonable. Well, I'm not sure. I've encountered some unreasonable people. Well, that was definitely one of them. We must not be that way. We must be willing to listen to others. Did it ever bug you when you were raising your children? Yeah, I'm going to. When they always knew their side real, real well, but they could not hear the other child's side. And the result was a fight, right? Or a big fuss. And you never. How hard it is to get. All right, now sit down and be quiet and listen to what your brother has to say, or listen to what the total unreasonableness. That's not the way Christians behave. We are gentle. We're reasonable with one another. We're commanded to so be. Let your gentleness be known to all men. Your sweet reasonableness, your moderation. The Lord is at hand. And you know what that means? You know when my kids got in the worst scrapes and fusses and fights? When Sandy and I were not around. Nobody there to referee and to say, would you cut that out now or are you going to be in big trouble? They were alone, and so they could just do whatever they wanted to and be totally unreasonable. And sometimes we might behave that way if we're not careful. And the Lord wants you to know, and I believe this is the point of the statement, the Lord's nearby. He sees what we're doing. He hears what we're doing. He knows what we're doing. He is going to take that into account and judge on Judgment Day unless we repent of that and make that right with the Lord. So let's be reasonable, sweetly reasonable in our dealings with others. And then we need to pray. Prayer should not be... How many people think, well, prayer's the last ditch effort? No! Prayer is so important in our lives. Not only daily, but as Paul said back in 1 Thessalonians 5:16 through 18, which we're to use, pray without ceasing. It should be the regular, constant part of our lives. And all of the problems that we have, yes, God knows about them, but He wants us to talk to Him about those problems and ask Him to help us bear up under the problems and help us to solve those problems. And so we must take our problems to God in prayer. Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 and 7. Be anxious for nothing. Do you know, and I'm preaching to myself, if you benefit from this, congratulations. Do you know it's a sin to sit around and to lay around and just make yourself sick with worry? That's a sin. It's a command of the Lord. Be anxious for nothing. Get over it. But in everything, by prayer, that's simply talking with God, and supplication, that's asking God for help. With thanksgiving, don't forget to thank Him for all the blessings He gives us. Let your requests be made known to God, and watch the result. The peace of God. Peace is the absence of turmoil. We have peace with God through Jesus Christ. We have peace with other people by learning to be moderate, gentle, reasonable, gentle in our dealings with other people. And we have peace of mind through prayer. The peace of God, that's absence of turmoil in your mind. That's where you're not like the fellow that jumped on his horse and rode off in four directions at the same time. He was so absolutely insane, didn't know what to do. The peace of God, which surpasses all understanding. People of the world want to know, and there's people I'm looking at in this audience that have gone through things and are going through things. The people of the world would say, I don't see how you handle that. How do you maintain your sanity in all the things you go through? Well, here it is. The peace of God, which surpasses all understanding. The people of the world cannot understand how a Christian can have peace of mind in the things that sometimes we go through. The peace of God that surpasses all understanding shall guard. It keeps you from going insane. I believe that's the point. Shall guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. When everything goes wrong and nothing goes right, how do you keep from going insane? You pray about it. You take your troubles to God in prayer. And I've said this before, you've heard this many times, but we need to be reminded of it. There are things that you can change. Change those. There are things that you cannot change. Take it to God in prayer and leave it there. He can change it. He has big enough shoulders. He can change the things that we cannot change. Now, there's just one thing you can worry. Now, here's things you cannot worry about. Don't be anxious about. Don't be anxious about something you can change. Change it. Don't be anxious about something you cannot change. Take it to God in prayer and leave it there. Everything else you can be anxious about. But not those two things. Leave it with God in prayer. Well, I'm going to have to quit. In just a moment, we're going to stand and sing together number 317. I may or may not finish this lesson in the future. You have the outline there. We're going to stand and sing number 317 together. There may be somebody in the audience.